What's up, biohackers? I've got to tell you about this delicious drink that I am sipping on. You know we try to eat clean, prioritize pure ingredients, especially when it comes to our protein powder. If we're not intentional with our sourcing, we could be exposed to so many harmful chemicals and toxins that are hidden in what appear to be healthy and nutrient-rich ingredients. This is why I got to tell you about PW1 whey protein powder from Puri. Puri is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants. It's also free from hormones, GMOs, and pesticides. Bonus, it is soy-free and gluten-free. It has 21 grams of protein per serving, which makes it a really easy way to increase your daily intake, especially for our ladies out there. And what we all want to know when it comes to our nutrition, is it delicious? Yes, it really, truly is. I am drinking it every single morning these days. I've been pretty much drooling over the bourbon vanilla flavored protein powder in my morning nutrition stack. It's great in my coffee, my home-crafted smoothie, and actually works really well just in my shaker bottle with water. These ingredients are so simple. There's no added artificial sweeteners, so none of the bitter, cringy tastes that come along with a lot of healthy powders. It's just pure and so yummy. Puri is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. They believe in full transparency with all of their products, including their PW1 whey protein powder. And each batch is certified by the Clean Label Project. Okay, but what does that mean? It is tested for heavy metals, bisphenols, residual solvents, and all of the other yucky stuff we do not want in our bodies. Lastly, every Puri product comes with a QR code with those specific batch test results, so you know exactly what you're getting. Of course, we always want to educate and empower you to be your own best health advocate, so don't just take our word for it. With Puri, you can find the real transparent data behind every single batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that we can easily trust. All right, so here's the details. Right now, Puri is offering our listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all of their other incredible products. Go now to our exclusive URL, puri.com/biohackerbabes, and use our promo code biohackerbabes. This will even apply to your already discounted subscriptions, and you'll get almost a third off of the price. They are being so, so generous with our audience. Go to puri.com/biohackerbabes. Do not wait. We have our promo code biohackerbabes at puri.com/biohackerbabes. This is nutrition made oh so simple. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
The end-all be-all is really not genetics either. It also really has to do with what's been your expression, what's your experience? Because we can do all the scientific research in the world, but really, you probably know what's best for you, right?
Hey there, welcome to the Biohacker Babes podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Renee, a certified nutritional consultant with a master's degree in nutrition.
What's up? And I'm Lauren, functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner and Czech movement specialist. We're sisters and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
Our mission is to provide actionable steps so you can optimize your health, strengthen your intuition, and support your body's natural healing abilities. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to episode 193 of the Biohacker Babes. I am Renee, tuning in from Las Vegas today, and I have Lauren, my sister, here across the country.
Hey sis, this is Lauren tuning in from Maryland today.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great. We've done it again. We got similar colors on. I don't know what is this pattern, the synchronicity that we've been following as of late.
Synchronicity. There's that word again.
There's a color pool. It's kind of a reddish. Well, I think you're more in a coral maybe, but I'm in like an orangey red, very similar.
Yeah. What would Dr. Deanna Minnick say about our color choices today?
Oh, I'm like totally in my first chakra today. I'm like survival.
I'm glad you're surviving over there. That's good.
No, not like survival fight or flight mode, but I feel it's a grounded energy, right? I'm in my pelvis. I'm grounded to the earth. I'm like, rawr, let's go.
Rawr. Awesome. All right. Well, your pop question of the day, what biohack will you be doing today that you're most excited about?
Hmm.
Or maybe you already did it since it's later there. still morning over here on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'm like, I had my whole self-care hour this morning. I already did. So what else will I do?
Oh, I saw that. That looks nice. That can be it.
Yeah, I had my, well, I'm in a microdosing protocol. So I was supporting that by doing a nature walk with Rudy. And then I came back and did red light, meditation. And I felt like I had to go a little bit deeper. So then I did 10 minutes of brain tap and then I journaled.
Nice.
Is all of that a biohack?
Of course.
The microdosing is a biohack.
Yeah.
The red light is definitely a biohack. It's all a biohack. It's all optimizing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Love it.
What about all you? Right. What are you going to do today? It's on the docket.
Definitely going to do red light, brain tap, and amp coil. But I'll probably stack the brain tap and the amp coil. I need to do some hormone harmony today.
That's on the schedule. I love that. Yeah, that's a nice hack.
Yeah.
I meant stack.
Stack hack.
Hack stack?
A stack hack.
That's a good stack. Excellent. Love that.
All right, biohackers. We have a guest coming on for you today. We have C. McDermott. And she is an epigenetic coach. So she specializes in everything when it comes to functional genomics, epigenetic expression. And we both just read her book, Your DNA, Your Life. And I just love her approach to genetics, how we really have the choice every day with what we do, that we are either with the dimmer switch, right? We're either upping our gene or turning our genes up or on or off or down, however you want to look at it with the dimmer switch, but just that we have so much control over our genetics and how they express every day, every month, every year, the rest of our life. So love her book, love her style of coaching, and I'm really excited for this conversation. And I just wanted to share something. I looked this up while we were on the podcast with her, but I didn't have time to share it. But we started talking a lot about the importance of relationships and social connection. And I heard this on a podcast yesterday. Here we go, synchronicity. And they were talking about broken heart syndrome and how the actual statistic is you have a 66% increased chance of dying if your spouse dies. I'm not seeing the exact time. I think it's like within 2 or 3 weeks. And it's so interesting because it's like, is there a physiological thing going on there? You know, why is it called the broken heart syndrome? I think it's just that social connection is so strong, especially with a spouse, because typically, you know, if they're married 50, 60, 70 years, it's pretty wild when we see this. So,
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of energetic bonding feels like that bond is kind of split open. So I think that's so fascinating. Relationships are just hugely important. And yeah, I love that element in our conversation today. I think this is a very different type of genetic conversation, which she's very well-versed and knowledgeable in all of the genetic SIPs and how this actually plays out in nutrition, coaching, and the scientific literature. But we really veered towards mindset, spirituality, and, you know, creating positive narratives for ourselves, which in my experience of genetic reports, you know, typically it'll say the SNP, you are base pairs, and then the advice below is usually supplementation, some form of exercise, sauna, cold exposure. But we just kept coming back to the mindset spirituality conversation. And again, with relationships and connection, just so hugely important when it comes to genetic expression. So just really grateful for that perspective, because I think that is sort of the umbrella that holds all of this together when we're looking at health and longevity specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, before we jump in, let me tell you a little bit more about her. So C. McDermott is a precision wellness practitioner based in New Jersey. C focuses on preventing disease and optimizing lifestyle through nutrition, behavior change, mindset, and stress management. She is a cognitive health specialist, a behavior change expert, a certified personal trainer, a certified genomics coach, Kundalini yoga teacher, the founder of C. McDermott Genomics, and the author of the international best-selling book, Your DNA, Your Life. She currently runs the operations of Apeiron Genomics and is continually expanding her genomic and epigenetic knowledge through education and personal experience. She was such a lovely guest. I am so excited to share this conversation with you all.
All right, let's dive in.
Welcome, C, to the Biohacker Babes. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk today.
Yes, we're both excited. I was just saying before we hit record that we both just finished reading your book. So excited to pick your brain a little bit more today, all about genetics, epigenetics, maybe some more about longevity, which I'm excited to nerd out about with you. And I think our audience is getting more familiar with this topic. We've been trying to bring it up as often as possible on the podcast this year. So I think to just like jump right in, what would you say are some of the biggest lifestyle or biohacking things that we can do to turn our genes on or off?
Well, yeah, I think really super foundational, starting with sleep, right? So getting in the proper circadian rhythm. So when I do genetic testing with clients, we always look at where the optimal time to sleep is. Some people are super early morning. Some people really are night owls. And then some people are somewhere in the middle. And I find that some people will say that they've been living their whole lives maybe as a night owl, and they are convinced that they're a night owl. And then we get their genetics. Perhaps they're actually living not in their circadian rhythm. And then when I convince them to make the change and they commit to that, they find a world of difference. And really in a lot of times in cognitive function, I find that a lot of people are like, wow, I didn't realize I was a little bit like maybe like brain fog or tired or kind of like moving through the day a little bit in a daze. And then they have that clearer cognition. I had a client a few years ago who was really had always been a night owl. You know, she went to bed 11 or 12 o'clock. Her husband was a night owl and they stayed up late. And when she switched over, she was in her 50s and she said, I feel like I'm in college with my thinking again. I can recall things more. And she's like, my memory is just like back. So something so, so foundational that costs almost nothing, right? Like we just need to get in line with our actual natural circadian rhythm.
Very cool. I love that. That resonates. I had a client that was so determined to be a night owl for her whole life. She was like, I was born this way. And I looked at her genetics and it said otherwise. So one, I'm really curious about how to best motivate someone to even try to go to bed earlier when that programming, whether it's unconscious or conscious, is just so deeply ingrained. How do you get them to even try that? And I'm curious with the genetics, are you seeing any crossover or confirmation then with the sleep chronotypes? So that the animal types, the lion, the dolphin, the bear, the wolf?
Yeah. So I actually was about to say people really fall into those storylines, right? Like I'm a night owl, I'm an early bird, and they really like to stick to it.
Don't
but
mess
I will
with
say,
me.
Right? Like yeah. this is me. I can't rewrite that story. So, yeah, luckily a lot of people, I think a lot of my clients are coming to me looking for change. So even though they might try a bunch of different things, I think the majority of people that are looking at their genetics are like, I've tried a lot of things. And over the years, maybe I'm starting to not feel my best, or just things are starting to just kind of slowly, maybe not, you know, kind of falling into place like it used to. The things that weren't working aren't working anymore, right? And usually that's around the age of like 40, 50s, to things just the body starts to say, wait a second, we're not living in alignment. And I think getting out of that story and kind of like wiping the slate clean and allowing them to rewrite that story based on, hey, I want to feel my best. And maybe if I'm in something like the wrong circadian rhythm, something so simple. And usually I'll just say, give it a try for 1 week. You know, and like when we meet next week, you know, because we do weekly coaching calls, let's just see how it feels, you know, and then it's often also about convincing a spouse or a partner, right? Because if you have people that are, you know, they're night owls, maybe that's the time they spend together. Or a lot of times people will put their kids to bed and then they're like, well, that's my time. And that's also a lot of time where people are like, oh, I'm going to scroll, I'm going to Netflix and
drink wine.
Have my glass of wine. Yes. And then I usually will put people on a trial of like, give me 7 days, commit to that and let's see. And it's almost without fail, they will say, okay, I do feel a difference, but you know, at times maybe they'll say, and I want to make the shift, not so dramatically. And then over time, maybe we can work it in. But I ask them to make that dramatic shift from that first week and see how it feels. And then sometimes people will dial it a little bit deeper in as we go forward. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I see a lot of correlation in, and you know, one of the longer researched genes is that clock gene, right? So we have a lot of clinical back data about the circadian rhythm, which number one is really when you're trying to show people that epigenetics is a thing that works, right? That you can apply to your life and it doesn't have to remain in a lab. I think it's one of those actionable items where you can say, here's the research, but let's try it out. And then when they feel that it's true, you're like, oh, right. It's kind of a way to convince the naysayers out there.
Yeah, totally. Because something that just came up with a client this morning, she found that she's one of those fast placebo responders. Mm. And her head was like blowing up. She's like, oh my gosh, what does this mean about everything that I've ever done in my life?
Yeah.
You know, you can really convince people based off a narrative or, you know, just a subjective experience can change the situation.
Right. And a lot of times with nutrition too, you know, we of course take a lot of look at fats is probably the main place we look just because keto is very popular. And then, you know, if you grew up in the 90s, low fat was super popular, right? I have the genotype that if I eat low fat, I would be like a mess. I'm like brain fog. I would be a disaster. I need tons of fat. So knowing that has helped me. And even in the last 5 years, my energy levels have skyrocketed. But really, I mean, as I'm aging, it hasn't made a difference to me because I'm in the right eating for the genotype, right? Because if you're, you know, if you're ApoE4, you probably want to avoid keto in a certain way, but it's still doable. It's going to be a modified keto, right? So I find that one of the bigger ones with energy levels comes down to like fat. That's another one that you can demonstrate with clients very simply to really show people what a difference and just have them kind of eat within that genotype for 1 week, see how they feel. And generally they're going to feel a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. I mean, I definitely experienced that with the saturated fat. The listeners have heard me tell this story before, but like I was doing the bulletproof diet with the butter and the MCT oil, and the coconut oil and the bacon, and I had terrible brain fog. And yeah, I guess, so I'm ApoE3-4. I think also the FTO gene, I'm not an expert in this realm, but there were multiple things that were pointing to, hey, maybe reduce your saturated fat. And I do feel better. But at the same time, I have to get my good, you know, adequate protein. I do need my healthy fats from the other sources, right?
Right.
Because I still don't do well with a lot of carbs.
So yeah. And that's, And it's perfect because then you can really find that balance. I'm not a macro counter. That's definitely not, I feel like that's for the majority of people, it's can be a bit of a miserly existence unless people love it and then go for it. But generally with most of my clients, they end up just kind of having an idea of like at the end of the day, at the end of like a 3 day window, what does the intake look like? And when someone has, for instance, a 3-4, we just really focus on those monounsaturated fats, avocados. And then, you know, even if you need, if you have the FTO where you can have higher fat and you have a 3-4, that's a common one too, I see. So it's really focusing on fat, the right fat. And then they're like, wow, not only do I feel better because I'm not doing like low fat, right? And I'm not getting those added sugars from the, you know, super refined, you know, like keto or like low fat, the low fat things that we have that end up having extra sugar. Then they're like, oh, wow, I have the right fats. And then again, like, you know, we know this is so related to the brain health in general, but also cardiovascular health. So then they're like, oh, my workouts are stronger and I'm walking around like, you know, with like on point, like that memory is there, recall's there, really being able to like hold your own in the workplace and really be able to perform at a higher level.
Yeah. We talk about this on the podcast all the time about kind of putting the puzzle together. And it just continues to blow my mind how many more and more pieces that there are. And it's, I think, especially with genetics, because we have 25,000 genes and we have a billion base pairs and millions of SNPs. And I think genetic testing looks at such a small piece of that. It almost seems like, how can we possibly know all of the combinations and the pairs and the best outcome? So do you believe, I guess for a good example is Renee and I have the same ApoE3-4 FTO gene, but I do really well with saturated fat. And I found out through another genetic test that I have something in my gut, which I can't remember exactly what it is, but I like downstream, I do metabolize it. So we're different in that way, but it was like that one little missing piece. So do you find that with the current literature and what we know about genetics, that the N of one experimentation, of course, like some coaching to support that, to set up like good, healthy experiments, is that the best way forward? Because I think it can be really kind of dizzying.
Yes. I mean, it can be very, it can be overwhelming for the average person. And then the average person that wants more data, like the biohacker, right? That can just really be distilling the data down to like what applies to you. First of all, step one is probably to get your baseline genetics, right? And then past that, I think having a coach or having someone that can assist you in at least figuring out what is the best kind of protocol to start. But the end all be all is really not genetics either. It also really has to do with what's been your expression, what's your experience? Because, for instance, we have the GAD1 variation. This would cause a gluten sensitivity, but also really a huge sensitivity to processed food, such as like, you know, MSG and food additives. So this is a really common thing that I see in people that come to me with anxiety, is that they have the GAD1 and there's other people that come to me with the GAD1 expression and it's not at all expressed. And they're like, no, I have no issue with that. Like, it doesn't bother me, or I mean, it's just not exposed to that very often. So we also have to look at not only what is your predisposition, because again, when you're looking at genetics, you're really only looking at the predisposition of the person. So you're taking the base pair from the mother, the base pair from the father, you get your base pairs. And then what is that actually, you know, how are these proteins being folded and how are the histones expressing so that we're showing, are you actually allergic to gluten? Do you have a sensitivity to gluten? Or were you not actually, was that never triggered most likely in childhood? And now you've never been exposed to it, that the body's going to react and you're totally fine with gluten, you know? So it really depends on what's the experience, which is why when I go over genetics with someone, instead of just handing like someone a, hey, here's a 30-page PDF, good luck with that, like have a nice day. I always incorporate coaching into my program, but I do all my genetics through Apeiron, and we do a very, very extensive array. So we can distill it down for the client, but essentially we do 750,000 SNPs, and we really look at, I think we have on the report right now, you know, there's like 500 different SNPs that we actually report on, and we're constantly building new reports. So right now we're working on a longevity report, we're working on a psychedelic response report. So we're able to really take a lot of clinical data that we have formulated from not only years of actual research from other realms, but even within the performance clinic that Apeiron runs, there's mountains of data that we are able to actually put this into practice. So we can say, well, actually GAD1 is often triggered by adverse childhood effects. And we know this through research now. So we can say, hey, going back all the way to childhood, hey, what happened to your mother during pregnancy? You know, how was your birth? Like, it can go way back. But again, what is the expression? How has it actually been triggered in your life? Or maybe not. You know, it's like that dimmer switch. Is it turned up or down? And then, of course, if you have that, how can we prevent it from being turned up or prevent it from being turned down, depending on the circumstance?
I love the nuances there. Off, on, but also the spectrum of the dimming is really powerful.
Lauren and I think so alike. I was just going to say. I've never really thought of it like as the dimmer switch. Yeah, I thought it's either on or it's off, but I didn't realize, yeah, there's really that spectrum. So
And you have some people that you can, you know, over time you can track and see like, hey, your sensitivity to this has gone down because of these changes that you've made. You know, like suddenly we're getting the quality sleep, or we've added cold therapy, or we've added sauna, you know, of course, two of my like more favorite of the easy and, you know, affordable-ish, you know, ice bath affordable, sauna a little bit less affordable, but also still doable in some locales. And, you know, something as simple as that, knowing your genetics, hey, are you more prone to having like a bad stress from an ice bath, or is that going to be good for you, you know?
Oh, okay. So funny. Lauren loves the cold and I love the heat and the sauna. So that's like, we always have this hot and cold debate. So yeah, I'd be curious if I have what's going on with my genetics as far as like, why do I hate cold? Is it actually good for me? Is it just so stressful that it's going to be good? Or is there a reason that I'm like appalled by the idea of getting in a cold
bath? I too, like my husband is currently on this ice bath kick. I am like, not for me, no. And I constantly tell him like, it must be nice to walk around with a 24-hour cycle and just know you can just ice bathe like that. And I'm like, women talk far more nuanced. However, for me, all about the sauna. It just works for my genetics, but I have done a little cold acclimation, but upon looking at my genetics, I'm like, it's not for me. It's too much of a stress. So yeah, it's all in there.
That's some good justification then. Oh, sorry, I can't do it. It's my genes.
No, it's genetically not good for me. Yeah. So,
but on the sauna, and I think Lauren and I discovered the other day, so we both tend to have lower BDNF based on our genes, and sauna is a great way to boost that. And I'm like, maybe that.
Yes.
I mean, that could be just one reason why I feel like a rock star when I get out of the sauna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's what's interesting is your BDNF. I mean, BDNF is so interesting that really, you know, even just exercise, you guys are both super fit. So, you know, like exercise increases this so significantly and really preventing a lot of cognitive decline in older age. And as we know, like the sauna, that correlation is so strong with, you know, for instance, like 4 days a week use, 20 minutes a day. It's a 60% difference in the research in cognitive decline with or without use. And it's, you know, it's like, I keep joking that not saunaing is the new smoking, right?
Oh, that's good. That's good. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah. What an incredible tool we have available. And, you know, as the research continues, you know, maybe the benefit will increase, maybe it'll decrease slightly, but clearly there's a correlation there. And I'm all for it. You know, anything that's really, and when it comes to saunaing, like you're extending your workout. If you get to go right after a workout, now you're getting a cardiovascular event. And really somebody that's injured or someone that's older that isn't really willing to like get their heart rate up all that high, or they're just don't feel up to it that day, maybe a little sauna, you know, if they're up for the stress of it. I think it's a great tool to add on to any healthy lifestyle.
Absolutely. Yeah. So heat for you guys, heat and cold, maybe the collective as a day-to-day thing, but what are the components that are affecting, like over the course of a lifetime, that are affecting this dimmer switch? You mentioned some stuff that potentially happens in childhood or at birth. I mean, we have a lot of lifetime that we've lived. It's not just in the last few days I sweat and I did some good things for my health. Yeah. What else is affecting the dimmer?
So exercise is huge, right? And nutrition. And then a big thing that I know nobody wants to hear because, you know, we're exposed to toxins, but, you know, environmental toxins. And I know there's kind of this, it feels like there's a little bit of a online debate in maybe like in the Instagram world where people are like, everything's toxic. We get it. But we can really reduce the toxic load, right? Because I know it can feel a little overwhelming for people when they first step into that realm and they say, oh, well, everything's toxic, so I may as well just like throw my hands up. No, we can reduce our toxic load. And when you look at someone's genetics, you can see like, are they more affected by exposures to BPAs from plastics, or are they more affected by smog? You know, so maybe not everybody can like pack up their family and move out of an urban environment where the air quality is lower. But at the same time, like a lot of people can throw out their plastic containers and buy a $40 box of glass containers that now you can use to store your food. You know, you can swap to a stainless steel bottle, which I think most people are not really drinking out of plastic these days, but, you know, avoiding heating plastic, not in the dishwasher. And something like so simple as that is really lowering our toxic load. And then being aware where we can make those easy changes. You know, I always test people to see what their health risk is to exposure to dental amalgams. And I know your father was a biological dentist, so you're probably well aware, you know, and that's something that I think people are starting to move towards where it's, hey, let's get rid of these old fashioned dental amalgams. And something so simple, every time you chew, you're being exposed to this. So, you know, that's a pretty big investment monetarily for people. But if you have this higher risk, maybe you do kind of put your priority there. If you have the resources and the ability to say, hey, this is my next big project. Instead of buying a sauna, maybe I actually go and look at, since my genetics are more affected by this, since the epigenetic, you know, dialing down of any positive health benefits might outweigh the, you know, the use of sauna. So then instead we, you know, you put the money towards getting those dental amalgams out. Yeah. So it doesn't always have to be
specific to mercury. Is that like can't like detox mercury well, or?
So there'd be like a heavy metal correlation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Heavy metals.
So often if people still have dental amalgams and they have kind of that lower propensity for health risk, I'll say that's probably not a priority. Now you could still do it, certainly if you have the resources, but if you're going to, you know, allocate economically to something like that might not be it. Or if they have that super higher risk, then it's like, hey, this is a place of focus. I just like to give clients like, hey, this is an area of focus where you're going to have a bigger impact, right? Because if you come in this space and you're like, okay, here's the list, right? And it's like this huge laundry list of like, speaking of laundry, like don't use laundry detergent anymore, right? Like use this instead and the fragrances. And, you know, it can be overwhelming to people. I know, like I have been doing this and incorporating into my life for so long that to me, it's like, oh, of course you make your own laundry detergent. But I realize that's probably out of reach for a lot of people.
Baby steps. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like getting people to be like, okay, how am I actually going to do this? I have to live in the world. I have to like send my kids to school every day, you know, make school lunches instead of buying school lunch every day. Maybe, you know, like what I do with my kids, they do pizza day on Friday and I allow it. I hate it, but I allow it, you know, and then I try to make sourdough bread for their lunch instead so that they have, you know, like the good part and the good gut bacteria. So it's like making those little changes where you can make those swaps. But I know when you live like full fledged in that world, people are kind of like, ooh, that's not for me. So I try to make it a little more actionable. And that way it can fit into the context of the person's life, right? Because it's like, if your family isn't on board or like your neighbors are not doing this, you might not be super open to it, right? So baby steps, like you said.
I really agree with that. Like really empowering the client to make that prioritization of the list. Because we do have a long checklist, but what is, you know, what are the biggest pain points? What do your genetics say? I think with dental amalgams specifically, I know the dangers. We know the dangers. But for some people, they're not symptomatic. So is it the top of the list? I mean, I would say so, but they have to ultimately make that decision. So
right.
All things considered, we have to make our own priority list. Otherwise, it's not going to be actionable. Mm-hmm. I guess just to follow up on the toxic exposures and maybe specifics, plastic, with plastic specifically, how much from childhood affects like our mother or father using plastics versus us using plastics now? How much does that stay with us? Or then we're just looking at detoxification pathways.
Hey, biohackers, you may have noticed that there are a ton of new supplement brands popping up every week. But unfortunately, there are a lot of junk supplements out there. They're using poor quality ingredients, and sometimes the label doesn't even match what's actually in the bottle. I know, it's so crazy. This is why Lauren and I are constantly searching for new brands and looking for the best ones so we can bring them to you all. And one of the brands that we truly love and trust is Paleo Valley. I won't run through all of their amazing products right now, but I will tell you about a couple of my favorites, which include their greens powder. It's the only one on the market I will even consume anymore because it contains organic greens and superfoods, plus it's gluten-free, soy-free, grain-free, dairy-free, and the real game changer here is that they don't use any cereal grasses like wheatgrass or fillers, which is really extremely common in greens powders today and can be problematic for a lot of people. They have other amazing supplements like their apple cider vinegar complex, which is great because it's in capsule form, so you don't have to drink the nasty apple cider vinegar that people don't love so much, and you get all the benefits for digestion, detoxification, blood sugar control. And then another favorite is their grass-fed organ complex. So you know we talk a lot about eating organ meats on the show because they're very nutrient-dense, but a lot of people don't want to spend the time to cook that and don't love the flavor of it. So they have put it in capsule form, taking away all of our excuses about organ meats. And they also have one other snack, the superfood bars. If you ever need something that's healthy, on the go, this is a really nutrient-dense, clean product that we love as well. And everything tastes delicious, plus they're 100% grass-fed beef sticks. I promise you, once you try these, you will never want to go buy just like a random beef stick at the store, whether it's at the gas station or Whole Foods, wherever. These are so delicious and they're very, very clean and we love them so much. So our friends at Paleo Valley were kind enough to give all of our listeners 15% off. And you don't even need a coupon code at checkout. All you have to do is use the link that's in the show notes for today's episode. I will also link to the episode where we had Autumn Smith from Paleo Valley on the show. That was earlier in 2022. So you can learn more about Autumn and her mission, which is just so beautiful and amazing. And we love the work that they're doing. So check out the show notes for today's episode. We'll put all the links in there. And let's get back to the show.
Yeah, it's mostly affecting detoxification pathways, but hormones are so disrupted that in early childhood, I would say, you know, like the generation, like the millennials, we were exposed to plastics. However, not as much. So now I think we have more knowledge. I think there was like a small window where there was a group of people pretty exposed, and really like preconception is so important to make sure that like a mother isn't exposed to a lot of toxins. Now, if she's just exposed to plastics here and there while pregnant, of course, the body detoxes all of this, right? That's its job. But
hopefully,
maybe, yeah. But we are also bombarded from every angle, right? And the way that we measure our toxic load in this country is like, if you were exposed to this one thing today, you would be okay. And of course, as we know, that's probably not a great caliber. I think we need to take a look at that and rewrite the protocol for that. But in the meantime, until some legislation gets takes place to do that, I think in the meantime we just limit that exposure. And yeah, like when you're a small child and you're exposed to plastic, hopefully you're not exposed to other toxins. Your body does detoxify it, and then as you grow, your hormones, you know, if you then eat within your genetics and you're sleeping well and you're getting you're in a caring, loving environment, then the body does adapt, right? And then it makes those repairs. So while there may be downstream effects hormonally, avoiding the endocrine disruptors for younger children and for pregnant women is super important, so that down the road, we don't have, you know, like for instance, super low testosterone in adult men or young men, and, you know, women or girls going through puberty much younger because they've been exposed to these endocrine disruptors. So yeah, I mean, it's part of a larger picture that I think we don't really take a look at, but definitely for our youth, it's as I think awareness comes, we are starting to like remove plastics, and then we'll have a little less, you know, fragrances in the air and a little bit less exposure to things. And then, you know, the bodies can begin to make those repairs as we, as a society, remove more processed foods and things for children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely seems like it's getting much better. I mean, especially compared to growing up in the 90s where we lived at Bath and Body Works. I literally bathed in, I mean, I had the shower gel, the lotion, the body spray, the soap, the shampoo, the lip gloss,
yeah. So I was practically eating that stuff.
Yeah. And then I would get dropped off at the mall and come with my big bag of Bath and Body Works. And it was so cheap and plentiful. You'd spend your allowance there and then slather it up before you went to like eighth grade school dances. Yeah. No, I mean, we were all exposed to quite a bit, I think maybe we
survived.
Yeah, we had less. I mean, I know I ate some pretty decent food when I was a kid, so hopefully that kind of reduced my toxic load a little bit. So yeah, we're a little wiser now, and I think those informed choices make a big difference for parents and kids.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's definitely changing for the better. So although I think Bath and Body Works is still at the mall, like last time I was there. I saw it, and I had to like run around it because I could smell it just coming out of the entrance.
Yeah. I don't know if we can say, are they going to get us in trouble? But yeah, it's a bad place to avoid it, especially if you're young. There's any of those real fragrance products, like, which even, you know, like the drugstore, like sprays, or, you know, in a public restroom, sometimes you can smell that stuff. Those are the real nasty ones. But as a brand, they probably need to pivot their products.
That would be great. I've noticed even Sephora is like overkill with the fragrance. And I do still shop there because there are particular brands that I trust and really like. But I have to hold my breath. I'm so funny. I like stand outside. I'm like, and I run in. It never lasts. I can't hold my breath that long. But
you could just wear a mask.
Or you gotta just shop online.
I do usually, but every now and then, you know, in person.
Yeah.
And what is that bath bomb store that everybody loves? It makes like the Lush.
Oh, yes.
Lush. That projects 20 feet outside of the store. So if you're even anywhere near it, I feel like I get a headache and get fatigue from that. It's pretty wild that some people are not tuned into the fragrance stuff. Like fragrance and not sonying is the new smoking.
Right. Fragrance thing is I think that's going to take off. That's like the next big thing is let's remove fragrance and we'll all be like a little bit happier.
I'm on board.
Damn. Yes. You got my vote.
Nice.
On a totally different topic, you mentioned something a little bit ago that really piqued my interest. You said something about psychedelics and genetics.
Yeah.
And that is something we have not talked about on the show at all. I'm so curious, what are you researching and what are you finding with that? Yeah. Because obviously psychedelics, it's exploding right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to second that because I looked at my genetics and they actually did not correlate, or they didn't match up with my experience of using.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So there's a fair amount of research going, and there's a few DNA tests for it now, but they're pretty limited. I think the most robust one has about 7 SNPs. So it's really limited. We're looking at some research, and we're actually going to be we're going to be at MAPS in June if you guys are going to the psychedelic conference in Denver. So Apeiron will be there. we're formulating everything now so that we can actually correlate it with people's experience so that we can say, hey, let's look at your genetics and let's look at your experience and get a little bit more of a population study going. So we're taking a look at many things. Pretty much all of the main players are, you know, we're going to be testing for. And it comes down to really dosage and then response. And we even actually the other day just found a pretty robust study that talked about which SNPs are affected cardiovascularly so that you wouldn't be in any kind of danger with ketamine. So yeah, there's a lot of really valuable research out there that's coming forth and really a lot to do with dosage and response. So that's where we want to make sure that practitioners can take a responsible look and make sure that their clients are safe and really also informed about where things will head, you know, and then what repeated use looks like. And, we actually do currently appear on also has a panel for THC and CBD as well. So that really has to do with any kind of like withdrawal or dependence. You know, like for me, the CBD, when I ran my genetics, I get like irritation with CBD. I never take CBD because I get, that correlates with my experience. I tried it a few times, just like a CBD seltzer and then like a, CBD drops. And both times, I was like irritated all day.
Oh, no.
And like frustrated with things. I'm like, okay, so this is not this is not great for experience for me. And when I looked at my genetics layer, I'm like, oh, that correlates. So yeah, I think there's so much value in this from a therapeutic standpoint, whether in a more formal clinical setting or otherwise, and people having that data will be really helpful for people to, you know, use it in healing processes or whatever type of ceremony they use in various forms. So yeah, we're really excited about that one.
Yeah.
Us too.
Yeah.
Like sitting on the edge of my seat. Tell me more.
Yeah. Because my husband on one of his genetic reports a while back, it wasn't a full psychedelic panel. I think it was just THC, but it said something like THC-induced psychosis or something. Mm-hmm. And when he has like an edible, he'll do like, I guess, 10 grams or whatever, he loves it. I mean, he has like the best time ever, but he has a like psychedelic experience, like full-blown psychedelic experience versus like if I touch THC, I'm like a full-blown panic attack. I hate life. Yeah, so I just don't even touch that.
Yeah. We can really tell a lot with anxiety. And then with the feeling of like the dosage is so important, right? Because now if your husband were to go in and go like full on like serious dosage, he might not have a great experience. So it's great to know. And you know, while we can do that was through self-experimentation and kind of like, you know, dip your toe in, see how it feels and reflect on that. I'm not a practitioner of psychedelics, but people in Apeiron are familiar with this and they are practitioners of it. So they're able to guide people in a way that's more responsible because they have that information. And going forward, that'll be part of our protocol, you know? So, that way we know instead of saying, well, let's try it out and see, you know, sometimes let's try it out and see what happens. And if it's not a good experience, people might not get what they're looking for. So yeah, it's just, again, one of those, like a little more information, a little bit more actionable information, then we can say, okay, like this is probably ideal experience for you in an ideal setting.
Yeah.
It'll be a really interesting new phase of psychedelic research because, again, as we talked about before, we can kind of create these negative narratives or kind of go down a rabbit hole with genetics based on what is being reported to us. And we know with psychedelics, going in with good intention and clear mindset and setting is so important. So I'm curious maybe how these reports are going to be dispersed and educated upon, because if you have this idea, I mean, obviously the dose and the setting will be adjusted according to your genetics, but I think it would be very easy to then start to go down this rabbit hole and narrative of something bad could happen or really believing that something is good. So I'm like sitting here just curious.
Yeah. So when we use all of our genetic panels, we actually don't do any direct to consumer to Apeiron. We work with clinicians and coaches and we have a robust training platform. We have a 75-hour training platform and the psychedelics panel will also have additional training that's required to interpret the panel. And then it will be, it's usually health coaches, clinicians, physicians, MDs, chiropractors, alternative health practitioners. And that way They have the data where they don't necessarily, you know, sometimes there's information that you have that you don't necessarily have to share with a client from the get-go, right? Like, I know your dosage, let's go into this so that it can be used in a responsible way. And that's certainly being integrated into the person that's writing our panel has an enormous amount of experience with this. And he's helping the academy to build this program. So we're really excited because I think he has years of experience in that space. So he's going to be able, and actually there's really two people that have several years of experience in that space, and they'll really be able to know exactly what that integration process looks like.
That's such a great point. I think it sounds secretive, but the patient client doesn't need to know everything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes
guys have a good coach.
Yeah. And really just like putting the information out at the appropriate time, really, you know, and then integrating that experience is helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, having a coach will be so helpful. I love that you do that. You also mentioned longevity, which I get so excited. What can you share about like any specific SNPs or interesting things you've been finding in the longevity space?
Yeah. So there's so much on, you know, like FOXO genes. So we're adding that to our array right now because there's only some of it in our array. So we're going to actually add a bunch of more SNPs, and that way we'll be able to test for it. So right now, one of the panels the longevity panel that we're working on, you know, it does an overall, you know, mortality risk, which all that information, all that research is already there, but a lot of the newer research, and we're going to be clinically vetting this as well, but really to be able to show like the propensity to live past 100 and then what epigenetic changes would affect you most, because, you know, now we're up to 12 hallmarks of aging, right? And that's, you know, some people were 9 and 10 and now we're 12, but really looking, you know, like my, and I think this is probably one of the top ones, but I think like mitochondrial health is super important to me and longevity. I think that seems to be a big part of it, but really what that comes down to is probably mostly nutrition, I'm going to say. You know, I mean, it's hard to like distill it down to one, but really, again, it's such a complex system that really all parts of, you know, sleep, nutrition, even, you know, relationships and mental health all play a part of that. But in the aging process, we have so much data now to show like what is happening in the blue zones. Like, okay, how deep are we going in the blue zone thing? How much do we really like trust that research, you know, because I know there's some disputed, like maybe that data wasn't quite as clear as we once thought, but now we have so much data, even from the 70s on DNA, that we're able to go back and look and say like, how long did these people all live and what were some factors? Now the human system is so complex, right? Like we have, not only do we have these bodies, but we have all the relationships around us and the environment and so many things that play into it. So how much of it, let's say in the blue zone, like, you know, my dad used to live in one of the blue zones in Costa Rica. Like, I know, right? It's so nice. But yeah. Like, is it the environment? Is it like because everyone ate fish? Is it because everybody had great relationships? Like, or is it like not exposure to Netflix? I don't know. But we can probably take all of those actionable things and put them together to say, here's like a longevity platter and like choose what you want from this. And then the more things that you choose from this, the more likely, you know, it just really comes down to, we can do like all the scientific research in the world, but really you probably know what's best for you, right? Like if you're, for instance, we know relationship, like close relationships and meaningful relationships are so important for longevity. And it feels like, well, that really has nothing to do with genetics, but really that's a huge epigenetic driver, right? So having a loving relationship turns up all sort, you know, oxytocin, and we're getting like the proper hormones that we need, but, you know, not having close relationships has a higher all mortality than smoking. Have you seen this? This is new, and I don't want to misquote it, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was. So, you know, but I think intuitively as humans, like we know if we're in a loving relationship, right? Like we have to sometimes take a step back from all that scientific research. You know, I'm enmeshed in this every day, but every now and then I'm like, hey, get to know your client and take a look, like you know yourself. And if you don't, we'll spend some time there too. Let's get to know ourselves as humans, but also like what feels good for you? Are you in a loving relationship? Do you have meaning in your life? Are you contributing to like the younger generation by helping, you know, in the community? Are you around grandchildren? What does that look like? So sometimes I think it's easy as a coach to get caught in this like mental game of like, oh, you know, the blue zones and we need the fish and the olive oil. And we get down to like these super, super specific channels. But sometimes I'm like, also, let's take a step back. Let's look at the macro and be like, okay, we need loving relationships. What does that that look like for you? What is that? What does meaning in your life look like? What does purpose look like? So sometimes you have to almost incorporate that spiritual side of things. You know, in the chapter in my book, I have a whole chapter about spiritual health, whatever that looks like. And that's so different for everyone. It's as different as our genetics, right? Because we're all different humans. So it's like more like that macro view.
Yeah. I really want to dig into the spirituality, but I want to say I was reading this newsletter this morning that said experts are now predicting that the current generation of US children are going to be the first to live shorter lives than their parents. So I'm wondering how much, and I don't know how true that is, but I guess with your knowledge of the blue zones, but also this macro view of mindset, spirituality, relationships, how much do you think that trauma, social isolation, lack of good relationships in that generation, like the children now, is going to affect their epigenetics and I guess longevity?
Yeah, I think, not to be a downer, but I think it's significant. I think the lack of social interaction is detrimental, you know, and I think the best thing we can do is try to get our children and young people to connect with each other in, you know, outside. If we can get people outdoors, that's huge, right? You know, even though we love to organize things, and for instance, like in organized sports, but at least they're outdoors for the most part, right? And then they're interacting with their peers. And really, I mean, I'm like a big advocate of nature and just like really getting back to those roots with my own children. And I really advocate that for others. I think the average child has 7 minutes of unsupervised outdoor play a day. 7 minutes. That's not enough. This is, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. Wow. We were on the go for 8 hours a day. And I'm not saying, you know, it wasn't perfect, but yeah, really just like being able to get that outside time. And it doesn't need to be outside necessarily organized, just outside. If it's with the neighborhood kids, I know we just have a very sheltered generation, so that it's easier, you know, and we're busy. So we say, well, I can't take the kids outside because we have the meetings and you know, and we all work from home now. But really getting kids around other kids, around other people, and out from behind the screen. I know like nobody wants to hear that, but really out from behind the screen and interacting in real life. I know some people will say, well, they're going to be on a computer the rest of their lives, so they have to learn it. And I don't know that that's true. I don't know that that's true. Honestly, I think we're going to go in another direction. I think we're going to overcorrect and we're going to go the way other way. And we're going to get kids from behind screens and get them outdoors and really eating whole foods and not necessarily being indoors as much and not on a computer to interact, really interacting in real time and real space. And I think that's huge. And really, I think from there, the human body knows what to do and children will thrive. So I think it's really just taking those few steps, and it's harder, you know, I was speaking to my husband the other day and we were like, it's a lot harder doing it this way. You know, we were saying like, this is hard. Yeah. It was a really rainy day and it was, you know, and it was cold and winter. But putting in that kind of harder work now is probably going to pay off because it shows in children and it shows in that genetic expression, right? We're really bringing up some of those happy hormones, those proper hormones that kids need to thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. We have some family members who have two young kids. Well, I say young, I think their oldest is now like a freshman in high school. And we've watched them grow up and I was so impressed with how the kids were around technology. Like, I think they were allowed to use the iPad for like 30 minutes a day, starting at, you know, 5 years old or something. But the parents were so disciplined about it, but the kids were so appreciative of the time they got with the technology because it was a limited amount. But like, I think they're just like amazing kids. They're smart. They're very talented. They're good at their sports. They're great around adults. They are world travelers now. I'm like, if I ever have kids, I'm going to need like a manual of like, how did you raise them with technology? I'm going to need a step-by-step there.
I thing that's really important to them is sitting at the dinner table and talking about what they're grateful for the day and kind of talking through their experience and how can we digest that information and then go into like the next day with that.
Yeah. And really teaching kids an appreciation for like, yes, this is technology. And I constantly tell my kids, and this gets a little funny because people feel preached to when, you know, when a mom is saying, oh, do this, not that, you know, but with that caveat, I will say, I try, you know, and it's a serious effort, but it is, I feel it is part of my life's work to raise these people, right? And give them the best possible chance. So I do take it very seriously. And it's, they know that it's a tool, but they know that the real world's out there and that we go for a family hike every single Saturday and Sunday that we can. And we go, you know, there will be outside time. And when it's raining, my husband's from Ireland, they're outside in the rain half the time because they don't seem to care. And we take our kids away for a month every summer. And we travel the world and we want to see new places. And I, you know, it's not always appreciated at a certain age. I know my son was like 4 and it was the first time he was on the plane with a television. He had never really seen TV. And he was like, you know, we were in Costa Rica at a pool and he was like, it's too hot. I just want to go back to the plane because he wanted to see TV. I'm just like, but like, I know at some point down the road, it will pay off, you know, like, because he had that experience, he got to go to a really cool place and see, you know, monkeys in the trees and all that stuff. But so it is kind of like that can feel frustrating to a parent. Like what, you know, what did I just do all this for? But this is kind of like, again, the hard work at the front end, right? It's just like anything in health and wellness. We know putting in the time for our, you know, our own nutrition, our own fitness and everything, like we know that there is payoff and there is an immediate payoff for us where we get to see our kids have these really wonderful experiences, but also we get to them allow them to have kind of the breadth of emotions rather than kind of like a dull, you know, life behind a screen. So, you know, it can, they can have like a higher range of emotions when they're not, when they're really just exposed to more experiences.
Mm-hmm. I'm very happy for my scabs and scars from sidewalks and trees. And I was
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And those are all just kind of part of, and really just for, you know, like jumping off of rocks are great for the spine, right? And like all this proprioception that kids don't necessarily learn from being indoors. So a guy like, I like all kids to get outside. And then kids of all ages, because I love people to get outside in general. Every person should be outside. So yeah, I'm a big fan of just like walking outside, hiking outside, sitting outside. I sometimes take some of my calls outside when I can, you know, and just trying to get that vitamin D and all that good stuff.
Yeah, if they could just make the Apple products, the computers, the phones operate better outside in the sunshine and the heat, I would be a very happy human.
Yes, that's a very good point. Yes.
Because there's only so much I can disconnect from my work, but I'm always like my everything's overheating. I can't see.
Yeah.
It would be optimal to be able to work outside.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I just went for an awesome hike on Sunday and it's just like it always blows my mind how amazing it feels. Like the air and the dirt and the sun. It's just so healing.
Yeah. And there's a really great feeling when you come home at the end of a day and you're like, wow, that was like a cool day, right? Like saw some wildlife or saw, you know, whatever you got some walking in where there were undulations on the road or the path and you're, you know, you're challenging yourself cognitively without even realizing it. And particularly in relation to longevity, we know this is huge. This is why like walking on a treadmill, okay, it's good, right? But walking outside is great. And that's great for longevity because it really does make a huge difference. Such a weird thing. But when you think about it, very intuitive, right? Like we have to walk to survive. So in aging, of course, we would be walking. So
yeah. I remember I heard this interview. There was a gentleman living in Japan. He had lived over 100. It was possible that he was in the blue zone. That's why they're interviewing him. But he said he had never been in a car. He had walked or biked everywhere. Obviously, he hadn't gone super far, but he walked and biked everywhere. And they thought that was a big part of why he lived so long.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned my husband's from Ireland and he doesn't actually have like the Clotho gene, the super longevity gene. And I always tease him because he doesn't. But his family, I mean, they lived on farms in kind of very rural part of Ireland. And they are all in their 90s, still going for walks, walking into town, riding bikes. And that's how they get around and working on farms. And they're all in their 90s and bright and as shiny as can be. And really just great at holding conversation. And all they're all about relationships and really like sitting by the fire at the end of the day. And I mean, just generations of people coming together. And I don't know if there is a blue zone there. I feel like it should be. It's not a blue zone, but I feel like that part of Roscommon, Ireland could be a blue zone. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm actually taking my kids there this summer. It's like he has family members in their 90s that are just like, yeah, come on by, you know. And it's really, I think, very clear there. It's a low stress environment, and it's quite honestly low calorie. They were farmers. They just didn't have a lot when they were younger. Yeah. And then really just those relationships.
Mm. Have you seen the movie The Banshees of Inisherin?
No.
But it was an Oscar nominated movie that came out this year with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. And they live, it's a fictional place in Ireland, but it's like a remote island and very simple, minimalistic life. And the story is actually kind of dark because it's about two friends. One of them just decides he doesn't want to be friends with the other one anymore. But the point of me bringing this up is that they walk everywhere. And I watched that movie thinking, I wish they had a pedometer on the screen because they must be walking 30 to 40 miles a day. They're just always outside and walking.
Yeah.
Like, so amazing.
Yeah. Well, walking is so great, right? For like we said, to be outside, but even just if you're not a person that's like, oh, I love running or something, going out walking, right? And particularly if you walk with another person, you're working on that relationship too. So
Yeah. So coming back to relationships, mindset, spirituality, there's a lot in your book about mindset. And I just really love that. I thought it was so beautiful that you kind of kicked it off saying that we need to have grace and ease and joy in our lives. Like that is the lens by which we need to start looking at our lives and epigenetic expression. So what can you share with our audience about how you've infused that into your life or some simple practices that we can start to use?
Yeah. So, I'm a Kundalini yoga practitioner and teacher. So every morning I wake up and my husband actually does it with me. We wake up and have a sadhana morning practice. And I think it makes, and whether it's an hour and a half or, you know, if something kept us up at night and the kids were up or something, you know, a nightmare keeps somebody up, we end up, you know, with 20 minutes, but we're doing some sort of breath practice or something. And that dedication really just allows me to find ease in the rest of my day. And that's so important to me because I feel like, you know, I'm a retired federal agent. So I used to work for the government for 16 years and it's a very high stress environment. So I feel like there was a really long time where I was swimming upstream and it was tough. You know, it's a really high stress job and not a lot of females. And it felt like there was no ease. And then I started really looking into how I was living my life. And I was always healthy. I, you know, quote unquote healthy, you know, I was always like a personal trainer and I did other things as side hustles. But when I really started looking at my genetics and actually living within the parameters of my genetics, but also adding that daily practice years ago, everything started to kind of just seem easier. And whether that was like something like a really high stress environment where, you know, your life is in danger or just like, you know, dealing with a kid's tantrum, everything kind of started to fall into place. And I found that the majority of people that are living outside of that alignment where they're either living really just like outside of their circadian rhythm or just eating and like, they're like, I wish I could eat better, but I don't know what to do. Or like, you know, oh, I grew up in a very religious household and now I don't have, you know, and I've moved away from organized religion, but I don't have a spiritual practice. So it just, if you can find something that works for you, that alignment starts to really fall into place. And then I just found so much ease in my life that all of the moments, and I use the word joy to really describe all emotions, but like at a higher level, right? So instead of just being like, kind of like, even all day, you really get to experience a moment where like the sunshine peeks through and you're like, it's like a very joyous moment, or like your kid taking their first step is a very joyous moment. But there's also just joy in like sitting and having a conversation, enjoying a cup of tea or, you know, whatever that may be. You can find those like kind of pieces of joy. I remember before I retired from the government, like finding joy in the real mundane, real boring part of my job where I was like, this is real goofy, but like, there's some joy to be found in that, even though it was something that I no longer wanted to do. But you can find grace in all of these spaces. And I feel like the term grace really brings you to you can have grace in all parts of life when you're going through something really horrible, when you're going through something very challenging, when you're experiencing moments of joy and joyous occasions. You can move through all of life with that grace when you have things in alignment. And it's really hard to do otherwise because it's, you know, when you're not kind of really fueling the body properly with the sleep and nutrition and relationship and that spiritual health, like you just, it's hard to describe it. It's just almost like you don't have this awareness to say, I deserve more, right? That I deserve to feel all the feelings and I deserve to like live this life that I want to be like, on my terms, and I have the choice to do it the way I want to.
Yeah. Choice. I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. This year, my word of the year is kind of, not to be cliche with it, but it's gratitude. I can never like revisit this enough. So that's my word of the year. But it's similar to what you were saying, is like finding or seeing the joy and the happiness in all the things, even when something is annoying you or frustrating you. It's like, but what can you be grateful for about that?
Yeah. So, yeah. And even
it's about choice.
Right. And having the choice to say like, this isn't working for me, or this is working for me, let's focus on this, or like this, you know, this friendship has run its course or something, you know, like just that you can say like, I get to choose on this and this, and, you know, I get to choose what foods I'm eating, for the most part, right? Like I have choice in that. What a great thing, you know, cause not everybody has that choice. So I have the resources to make that choice. And then, I get the choice to choose, you know, where I spend my time, who I spend my time with. And you know, this is kind of random, but recently there's new research out about like, you really share your gut microbiome with other people. It almost like leeches. So yeah, it's like, yeah. I gotta make sure that I'm with some good microbiome people, right? Like I want to choose my microbiome well. And, you know, I say that in jest, but it's kind of true.
Let's hang out. I give my fiance a hard time and I'm like, your health is my health, because
right?
Skin microbiome, the oral microbiome, there's just so much bacteria being shared. So like,
right. Yeah.
I mean, sorry to be selfish, but this is about me.
Yeah. They say like, oh, you're the people that you surround yourself with. They're like, ooh, that's actually quite true. When I'm talking about the collective here, we might've been onto something when someone quoted that originally.
Yeah, down to the microscopic level. Who knew?
Deeper than they knew.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, see, thank you so much for everything that you shared with us today. This was such a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was super fun.
Yeah. To ask one final question, if you can leave our audience with a piece of advice, something they could start doing today to optimize their health, what would that be?
Oh yeah, I think really just the knowledge and like really sitting in the knowledge that you are not only responsible, but able to make changes in your genetics, that you can turn those dimmer switches up and down as needed. And it's really up to you. You get to make that decision. And those are tiny micro decisions all day long and throughout your life, and big decisions and small decisions. It's all up to you and you get to decide.
That's great.
I love that. I think that's really great permission that people need to hear, because genetics have kind of conditioned us to think that we don't have a choice. So
yeah,
thank you for the permission and thank you for empowering us with such amazing advice. And it was just so lovely to chat with you today. Can you tell our audience where to find more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah. So you can find me at cmcdermott.com. And if you wanted to know anything more about the Academy of Apeiron, it's Apeiron Zoe. It's APEIRONZOH.com. And there you can find out for genetic testing, for coaches and clinicians, and the Academy and all the things that we're working on there, including those psychedelic panels coming out.
Ooh, coming. Yay. Amazing. Thank you. Yep. And we'll link to all of that in the show notes for today's episode, so it's easy for everyone to find. Cool. Thank you again so much. We really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks.
And thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional.